Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Peter Lowe, the one, the only. He's back, the attorney, the employment attorney from Maine. Peter Lowe, welcome.
Good morning. You know what? I feel a little bit like that time when you had a date stand you up, and you go through your Rolodex. No, we don't have Rolodex anymore.
And, yeah, I was going to say Rolodex, you're really dating yourself, okay?
But I am always pleased to be here with you.
No, we're happy to have you on board. Happy to have you on board. Hey, you know, there's been a lot happening in Maine, especially having to do with the referendums that passed in November. So let's talk about some state things that have happened. We can go through them one by one. But first of all, what's your take on, you know, kind of what the electorate is saying here in the state of Maine in regards to employment? Are they looking for more things to happen for them?
It's hard to read. We obviously had, was it five major referenda, and we've got marijuana being legalized, it appears, by a very narrow margin. That was not clearly directly a workplace issue, but it has implications. I'm sure we can chat about that.
Absolutely.
And the minimum wage was obviously successful. There's no recount on that. And then get my numbers confused, but I think it was question two. Again, not so much directly impacting the workplace, but certainly will impact businesses and individuals with the additional taxation over $200,000. So it's sort of a curious mixture of outcomes. Plenty to talk about.
No, there is. There's plenty to talk about. So let's get started.
Sure.
We'll start with question one, because I think, you know, this is the referendum of legalizing marijuana for recreational use, irregardless of what the personal belief is in terms of whether it should or should not be legal. The fact is that employers are going to have to deal with this now. And based upon everything you read and see, it's been a challenge for Colorado, who has done this already, right, in terms of making that happen. I guess there are two parts to this question. One is, how is it different? In other words, what do we have to look forward to in terms of how it's going to be implemented here in Maine? And then second, maybe, can employers still control their workplace, especially, I would think, in regards to safety?
Yep. So my understanding, at least, you mentioned Colorado at the beginning. I think from the reading I've done and speaking with some people who are very involved in Colorado in administering the legalization now, I think the jury's out. You know, and folks are looking closely at Colorado to see whether or not marijuana usage is going to increase. It appears it is. How would it impact young people? How will it impact safety, highway safety, and, of course, workplace safety? One really important distinction is that the Colorado marijuana law is far more friendly, if you like, to employers than Maine's is.
Interesting.
I heard in the lead up to the election many references to Colorado, and it was a little bit deceptive in that the Maine legislation has some provisions that we should discuss that certainly have an impact on the workplace here in Maine. When you voted, you were presented with a paragraph essentially said, do you support the legalization of marijuana for 21 years old and older? And at the same time, you are approving a much longer statute. I forget the number of pages, 10, 15 pages, if not more. That's where the detail lies. But that language has been passed, assuming the recount stands. Mm-hmm. So when you drill down into the details, and for anybody who's interested, you find it towards the end of the legislation, there's a couple of provisions that apply directly to the workplace. And it's like some of the other laws you and I have discussed on this program before. While it answers some questions, that leaves some questions unanswered, at least a gray area. It seems clear from the legislation, no surprise, and maybe it's easiest to talk about what employers sure. can do, first of right. all, not be in the gray zone. So right. employers may prohibit cannabis at work. And I use the word cannabis because that's what they state in the statute in that particular provision. It's interesting. I don't know why, but they go between using the term cannabis and marijuana. Frankly, there's a movement, this is an aside, there's a movement to move away from the term marijuana and move towards the term cannabis. And if you study the history, there is some belief that marijuana was used as a denigrating term in the early part, I think, of the 20th century. So anyway, little bit of background. Oh,
sure. So an employer can ban cannabis, marijuana, from being brought into the workplace, being used at the workplace, being smoked at the workplace, being ingested at the workplace. I'm just trying to get clarity on that.
Yes. So the use, the possession, the sale, the transfer, any of those actions may be prohibited by an employer in the workplace. Then, and not to get into splitting hairs, but there's a provision that is certain to attract, number one, attention from the state when it implements regulations. But number two, depending on those regulations, it will attract interest from lawyers and spawn litigation, I suspect. There's a provision that says, I should quote from the law. You know how rare it is, Dave, for me.
It's a good thing you have it written down.
Yeah. good job I can find my notes. This chapter, that means the law, does not affect the ability of employers to enact and enforce workplace policies restricting the use of marijuana by employers. My own personal opinion about the meaning of that provision is that as an employer, if you adopt or currently have a drug-free policy in your workplace, a drug-free workplace, mm-hmm. and you, in that policy, prohibit your employees from using illegal drugs as defined by federal and law. State law,
okay, yeah.
then you may implement that policy and enforce that policy. What does that mean? Well, taken to its logical conclusion, it means, in my opinion, and I will add this is simply my opinion, and we should wait and see to, how the state addresses this. But in my opinion, it means that if you're an employer who has drug testing, and the drug testing reveals the presence of an illegal drug under federal and or state law, and you are an employer who says, we prohibit the use of illegal drugs by our employees, then my interpretation is that this statute allows an employer to take that position. This is interesting. This is going to play out because whenever an issue is being hotly debated in the political sphere, the proponents will minimize the impact of the legislation. So the proponents of question one gave exactly the interpretation that I've just provided. Now, post-election, we may see a different interpretation, whereas the detractors, the opponents of question one, were taking, frankly, over-exaggerated positions about the scope of the legislation, saying, you know, we can't do anything about employees using marijuana. That wasn't accurate, too. This will be addressed, I would hope, by the state, by the Department of Labor in implementing regulations, or maybe it's the Department of Health and Human Services will be responsible for those particular regulations.
So we've talked about the medical marijuana law here in the state.
Yeah.
And how it, in a sense, from drug testing perspective, the employer has the option to know yay or nay. Does this new law...
Yep.
Trump that law, or does it work in conjunction with that law, or is this one of those we don't know yet?
It works in conjunction with the law. It doesn't supersede the medical marijuana statute. The medical marijuana statute applies exclusively to medical marijuana. This statute will apply exclusively to recreational marijuana, or as some people prefer to call it, adult use marijuana. So they'll coexist side by side. But for our employers that you and I work with, that's tricky because it means that there may be a different standard applicable to medical marijuana as compared to recreational marijuana. My pragmatic advice for employers is view marijuana, recreational marijuana, like alcohol.
That would make sense.
And therefore, if somebody is impaired by recreational marijuana at work, treat it like you would an employee coming in who's been drinking alcohol.
So in some cases, the employers have policies that say if you come in drunk, you're terminated.
Yes.
Would we then state, based upon that, that if you come in high, you can be terminated?
Yes, I believe that would be completely consistent with this new statute. There is language in the statute that says that the law allows an employer to discipline an employee for coming to work under the influence of marijuana. Now, of course, the term under the influence raises a host of additional questions, and this legislation doesn't define what it is to be under the influence. And as you no doubt know, that's a trickier issue,
right,
for law enforcement, and therefore will be for employers and health professionals to determine whether or not an employee is under the influence of marijuana. But remember, I said, and you asked the question, the medical marijuana statute and the recreational marijuana statute, how do they coexist?
Yeah.
Here's one difference you may face as an employer. You may elect not to discipline a medical marijuana user who comes to work and is under the influence of his or her medical marijuana. You may have a policy that says, you know, we'll send that person home, or we'll make sure they get home safely, but we'll treat that person in a similar manner to an employee who comes to work and has taken a prescription drug and is having a bad reaction, or, you know, is not fit to work
yeah,
because they've taken a narcotic. Whereas somebody who comes to work and has used recreational marijuana and is under the influence, you may choose to discipline, including potentially terminate that person. So those are all things that employers are going to need to work out and will need to look at their drug and alcohol policies that most employers have in their handbook, and evaluate how they're going to treat recreational marijuana.
Yeah, no, it really does mean you're going to have to revise that portion.
Yeah, you are.
Handbook without question.
Back in 2009, when the medical marijuana statute was passed, our clients did revisions to most of them did revisions to reflect that. It's the same thing. It's not a drastic overhaul, but there's definitely some adjustments. There's one other provision that we should mention in the new law that relates to the workplace. And it's very similar to a provision that's in the medical marijuana statute, but it is different. And of course, that again will create some issues. And it says an employer may not refuse to employ or otherwise penalize a person solely for that person's consuming marijuana outside of the employer's property. So you may not refuse to employ someone or otherwise penalize them solely, so emphasis on the word, for using marijuana outside of work.
So you could argue that if somebody saw you posted that you were using marijuana on Facebook or you were doing something and somebody saw you, that you could not do that. But would that make it tricky for drug testing, where if you drug test, you will then know that person has
That's the question. That's going to be the big question. So I think a simple way to illustrate this one is if I'm considering hiring Dave Chulo to be a salesperson, and I learn somewhere along the way that Dave is a stupendous pothead, and I say, I don't need that, and I decide not to hire you solely because I know that you use recreational marijuana, I believe that would be a violation of the law. Now, I didn't like the fact that you were using marijuana, but it turned out you were not the most qualified candidate, then I wouldn't be excluding you solely based on your marijuana use.
Okay, that makes perfect sense.
The issue where this will become difficult and subject to a claim, I would expect one day, is if I do drug testing as an employer and Dave Chulo shows up as a positive for marijuana in my drug test, can I say I'm not going to hire Dave Chulo for his positive drug test? Dave Chulo will argue,
The law says
you can't penalize me solely because I've consumed marijuana outside of work, essentially. Peter Lowe, representing your employer, will say, that's not the sole reason. The reason that I am not hiring you is we do applicant drug testing and we have a drug-free workplace. And therefore, we're not hiring you consistent with our drug-free workplace. That's going to be the big issue.
We're talking with Peter Lowe, employment attorney from Braun and Isaacson. We're talking about the state of Maine referendums that passed here in the state of Maine back in November 2016. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 1310 AM 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. And we'll be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Peter Lowe, employment attorney with Brannon Isaacson, and we're talking about the referendum questions in the state of Maine that passed. And we've been talking about question one, Peter, about the...
Can I do a shameless plug? Isn't this what this program is for?
Sure.
Well, I've written an article... Weeding through Maine's legalization of marijuana.
Nice word term. Even our producer Debbie is chuckling.
Yeah, yes. I mean, the headline really is the main point of the whole article.
Absolutely, it is the whole, of course.
But a bunch of the things we just went through, I did write an article recently on. Be happy to provide it to people if
perfect.
They want,
what
if
we'll
they
do
they
is if you have it on the website or something, we'll provide a link
sure,
to it. And
sure,
and make sure we do
because
that
because some of the things we just covered are clearly. And I want to emphasize to people listening, they're going to want to tread carefully. I gave my opinion about what I understand the statute to be. Remember, I'm a management lawyer. I represent management in these issues. But they're going to want to tread carefully.
As we wrap up our discussion here on question one, which is the legalization of recreational cannabis or marijuana, I wanted to follow up with the employer's responsibility when it comes to safety, and what their responsibility is in regards to how OSHA will potentially handle a situation where an individual has an accident, and during the investigation of that accident, it is determined that they were impaired by marijuana. And from that standpoint, the question then becomes, if the supervisor was not either trained or not properly trained on how to figure out if somebody is truly impaired or what the signs are. Maybe there were signs, maybe there weren't signs. How can an employer be held responsible for that if it's now legal but not legal?
Yeah,
it's a question because since OSHA is federal law.
Yeah. No, it's a great question. I'm advising employers, and in fact, just on Friday I was at a plant providing training to supervisors, that now's the time to train your supervisors, if you don't already, on their role in detecting whether an employee is under the influence or impaired, and define that role for them, explain the limitations of that role. And the training is not entirely new in that if you've got employees already who are covered by federal drug testing programs, there is a requirement under the federal DOT standards to do such training. And the state, I believe it's a partnership between the Maine Department of Labor and the Department of Health and Human Services, are developing their own impairment training program that I believe I'd anticipate it will be available next year. It's voluntary training. It was part of some proposed legislation that the Department of Labor sponsored or promoted last year that was unsuccessful, but they're moving ahead with the training part. So in won't surprise you, Dave, but in order to do this, you need to provide your supervisors with the right tools. And that starts with a policy. So employers should have a policy that defines what it is to be under the influence of any substance at work. And that goes from recreational marijuana to medical marijuana to prescription drugs to alcohol to NyQuil. Someone pointed out, if you haven't slept for three nights, you may well be impaired, at least, even if you're not under the influence of a substance. So supervisors should be trained on identification of those symptoms, how to respond, how to have a conversation with the employee, probably have a second supervisor or leader or HR person present, how to document it, how to ensure the person gets home safely, and then potentially have HR, if you have one in your organization, then address fitness for duty issues, probably through a medical provider.
So one other last final question is if somebody has a federal DOT driver or there's some federal aspect, that does not change at all, correct? There's no changes that because it's still federally illegal.
Right. It is. You're right. So no change whatsoever. Federal law trumps the state law.
Okay.
And on that topic of trumps, the question that is out there now is what will be the new administration's position on marijuana? As we know, the current administration, after sending some mixed signals fairly early on, then took a position through the Attorney General that they would not pursue individuals who were legally using medical marijuana in those states where it had been authorized, or recreational where it had been authorized. There's been some mixed signals about what the position of the new administration will be. And for the marijuana lobby, the pro-marijuana, there's some nervousness. So that'll be, a new issue that we'll face.
More to deal with for 2017, right? More to deal with.
Yeah.
All right, so we've talked about question one. Let's head into question two. And question two really is a question that said, if you make more than $200,000 in income, and there's some discussion about what that means, but $200,000 in income, this could be S corps, could be LLCs or sole proprietors as well. You have to pay an additional 3% tax, which is going to go into the general fund in the guise of going to education. Mm-hmm. So anything you can provide for us on that other than, obviously it's going to happen. There's a lot of employers here in Maine that certainly we have talked to that are holding off on bringing executives in, and they're having to either pay the additional 3% for them in salary or to get them to come to the state. It just seems so anti getting people who can provide jobs and businesses here in the state of Maine.
Yeah. I from the employment law perspective, there aren't any implications for employers in terms of their policies or how they conduct their business. I think the question that you present, and it's a fair one, and I think some of our clients are seeing it, is that it's certainly going to impact not only individuals but those family-owned businesses where there's going to be a higher tax rate imposed on those monies. And my understanding, and I wasn't close to this referendum question, but it obviously got significant backing from the teachers union, both I believe within the state and possibly outside of the state as well. I'm not close to it, but it was an interesting one to pass at the same time as some of the other referendum questions that went through. So you may be closer to folks, business owners, talking about the impact than I have been. I've heard a few things, but not an awful lot at this point.
The only question that I would ask, and this may be an opinion question, but I think that there's some talk about it. Is it or is it not discriminatory to target one group from that aspect, or could there be some sort of claim that you're targeting a group, or is that okay under?
Yeah, I it's rare that I'll say I don't know the answer, but I don't know the answer under tax law. I would be able to tell you if it was an employment law question. I don't know whether you can challenge a tax law. I suspect not, because we've had plenty of times where You know, we tax people based upon their income. Obviously, that's what our tax code is based on to some degree. I've heard people say your point, which is
just asking the question.
It's taxing. The argument's being that it taxes a specific group in order to provide funds for another group.
Right. Rather than though the argument is, I guess, that it goes into the general fund under the guise of going into the education fund. And whether it actually gets there, we'll see. That's another whole conversation in regards to that. All right, so that's fine. So I just thought it was interesting because we are finding that it has already begun to create issues with bringing top-tier talent to the state. And we do have large organizations, whether it be, you know, you can think about the top five or six. One of them, you know, L.L. Bean is an employer of choice here in Maine. And there are senior leaders that's going to affect in some cases. And
and
whether it covers with bonuses and everything else, it's still income in regards to making that happen. Okay. So, you know, I'm going to go back for 1 second because it occurred to me I had one last question on the marijuana law. Then we're going to take a break and we're going to talk about the minimum wage. So I know he's looking at me like, oh, gosh, we're going back there. You know, it's a very, very simple question, very simple question. So an employer will rewrite a policy that will allow them to differentiate potentially between medical marijuana, recreational marijuana, or no marijuana in regards to what we're basically saying in the workplace. Is there any concern that if somebody says, I need to bring it to work, is that a reasonable accommodation? Or again, because the ADA says is federal, is that not a reasonable accommodation?
Mm-hmm. The answer to that is an employer may still prohibit an employee from bringing and using medical marijuana at work based on the medical marijuana statute. The medical marijuana statute is clear that it does not allow, or certainly an employer may prohibit the ingestion of medical marijuana at work. The claim has been brought in other states that it should be allowed based upon a reasonable accommodation for the underlying medical condition, which is a disability. Those claims to date have been unsuccessful, and you're right. One of the reasons they're unsuccessful under the ADA is the ADA is a federal law, and marijuana is illegal under federal law. It's not been tested under state law. However, my opinion is that claim will not be successful if brought on behalf of an employee who says, I should be allowed to use my medical marijuana at work or during breaks because it is necessary for me to treat my chronic pain, by way of example.
Great. I just wanted to make sure that nothing had changed on that because that was the case.
Yep.
But every time a new law is introduced, you never know if that's going to be part of it. All right, we are listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB, 1310 AM, 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. Right now, Harbor Bay long sleeve tees are just $29.99 each when you buy two or more.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Peter Lowe, employment attorney with Brian Isaacson, a frequent guest here on the HR Power Hour. And we've been talking about the referendum questions and what they really mean to you, the employer, here in Maine. We've talked about question one, which is the recreational use of marijuana. We've talked about question two, the income taxation of over $200,000 in income. And now we're going to talk about question four, which is the minimum wage question. And so it passed pretty handily. Yeah. Actually, that was actually one of the ones that there wasn't a lot of question that it would pass. If you want to just go through the basics first, and then we can talk a little bit about it and how this works with some of the cities and towns that are thinking of doing other things, all that aspect of it. Give us your take on actually the what's going to happen first here.
Yeah, so this one, when I last checked, passed by about 10 percentage points. It was because of, I think, the profile of the marijuana, the gun issue, number three, it was sort of a little bit overlooked, and I think we woke up after the election and said, "Oh, we're going to have a new minimum wage here in Maine, and it's going to take effect on January 1st." And currently, the minimum wage here in Maine is $7.50 per hour. And as of January 1st, that will increase to $9. And this is, of course, statewide. It's a state law that will take effect. It's a quite a simple statute in that the minimum wage will increase by $1 per year until it reaches, in 2020, $12 per hour. And after that, the legislation provides for an ongoing adjustment to the minimum wage based on a CPI,
consumer price index
formula. And so, as we've seen here in Maine and certainly around the country, minimum wage has been a hot political issue. And because in some states and certainly on the federal level, political gridlock has prevented any changes for quite some time, municipalities and cities had taken it into their own hands. And so here in Maine, we'd had Portland with it.
Yeah, it's Portland's 10-10.
Yeah, and Bangor had it. You know, this was put onto the ballot for a referendum, and this will be state laws starting next year. Interestingly, I was talking to a client just last week, and I was there to discuss the new overtime rules with them, and I was a little bit surprised. And this is a business that has operations in many different locations, both here in Maine and out of state. And they said, you know, the minimum wage is a trickier issue for us just from an administration point of view than the overtime, because there are so many different minimum wages in different jurisdictions now. You know, and you have to keep paying attention to that if you have multiple locations, because as we mentioned, states can impose their own minimum wage. We're seeing that here in Maine. And then, of course, municipalities and cities can and have and will impose their own minimum wage as well.
Yeah, I think in terms of this, I don't think it was a surprise that it passed. I'm also, you know, $9 an hour, to be honest with you, as you look at most of the places here in Maine. I mean, McDonald's is paying $9, $10, $11 an hour, depending upon where you're going. You know, there are very few, if any, employers that were paying minimum wage. Maybe seasonal help. You know, that's still going to be probably the area that I see the most challenge is the, you know, especially the coastal towns paying college kids and even in terms of, you know, we're seeing a lot of elderly getting jobs, you know, that want to work and continue to work, and they're filling that gap because of the continuing problem with finding talent here in Maine for menial jobs and so forth like that. So I, you know, not a surprise that $9 an hour, I don't think that is going to make a huge impact. I'm a little concerned about the CPI formula that they're going to use once it hits 2020, only because that can fluctuate so much depending upon what's happening at, you know, in the economy at a federal level. It could go all over the map. So I'm not sure that was the best formula to use, but hopefully by then maybe we'll come up with something different in terms of it. I mean, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, certainly they say a week is a long time in politics, and by 2020, goodness knows what has changed. But yeah, it will be for the first time tied to the CPI, and I guess if we see some big fluctuations, that's going to have an impact on businesses who need to always budget and plan for the future.
Right. Well, business will do anything as long as they know what the rules are, right? They can typically work within confines. It's when they're confused and they don't know what it's
going to be. Yeah, it's true. I mean, businesses and employers are looking for clarity. They want to be able to plan, to move ahead, to know what the rules are. Sometimes they're not going to like them.
Right.
But, you know, you and I know from working, you know, with so many businesses, the big request is, tell us what it is.
Right.
And so when I'm saying, well, it kind of depends, and it's unclear, or it's gray, or it's foggy, you know, I get up and talk to people about, you know, these marijuana issues, and you can see it's shaking their head saying, why can't the legislature just make it clear for us?
No, it's true. And I would expect that you'll even see a bump in the federal minimum wage coming. We've been, based upon what we're hearing in terms of what the administration has said, I'm sure that's going to actually come because it's been such a long time. I do anticipate that's going to be part of it. So, you know, we've talked about the three main, you know, rules that are going into effect here in Maine that affect employers. I don't think question three really had anything to do with the background checks in regards to guns. And then number five is force rank voting, which, you know, really has nothing to do with employees, at least not today, I would say, that has anything to do with voting. Any other issues that you see coming up in the Maine state legislature or anything that we're seeing in trends? I will throw one out there. We're seeing that paid sick time is becoming a little more popular across the country, being talked about. It's been in the legislature here in Maine a couple times. And do you anticipate any more fights on that or any other bills that you think would be of interest in terms of that?
Yeah, I think you put your finger on the issue that seems to be increasing its profile in state legislatures around the country. And, you know, we sometimes just have to look south to our friends in Massachusetts, and you can see proposals that have been made and ultimately passed down in Massachusetts, and they frequently provide a model or at least a template. And I'm not close to, you know, the Augusta world, but certainly follow it when legislation is passed. And I know that there have been efforts over the past several legislative sessions to introduce some changes and provide for paid sick leave. You'll see on the corporate level as well, there's definitely an increased pressure or competition from companies, and some companies are adopting those policies that are moving sometimes ahead of where the state laws go. So, you know, particularly one I think of in particular where you're seeing more is guaranteeing a paid maternity leave, for example. So, yeah, that'll be an area. Frequently, here in Maine as well, we see legislation that is targeting the employment at will doctrine and amendments that would be proposed through legislation to provide a for-cause termination protections or similar protections for employees in those settings. I don't see that those would be successful, but I wouldn't be surprised to see continued effort to target that.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM, 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Because you've booked with Booking.com, you, freedom lover, are on the road and carefree. You're not worried that dealership billboards spoil beautiful views or that the fresh, cool breeze gives you a mouthful of fumes. No, because you know in just a few more miles, you'll be free to rock around in the perfect Booking hotel, treehouse, or rustic cottage of your dreams. Thanks to Planet Earth's number one accommodation site, Booking.com. Booking.yeah!
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. Today we've been talking with Peter Lowe. He's an employment attorney with Brown and Isaacson, and a special guest here on the HR Power Hour. Peter, as we have talked about the referendums here today, 1, 2, and 4, we've certainly gone through all the things that employers should be looking for. Can you leave us with what we would call some holiday thoughts in regards to three top things employers should really think about from a compliance standpoint as they kick off 2017?
It's really going to ruin their holidays to think about some of these things, but no, we'll do it. I think number one on the list of HR to-do items for many employers is going to be ensuring that they have in place very sound policies for employees, particularly their non-exempt hourly employees, to track their time. Sounds really obvious, but all the focus has been on getting into compliance with the new overtime rules. That's great, and that's necessary. But once that kicks in, once we've got all that in place, the imperative is to make sure that our non-exempt employees are tracking their time accurately, because we're going to have more non-exempt employees in all likelihood, and we're going to have employees who used to be exempt now being non-exempt and not used to tracking their time. And as the statistics show, off-the-clock wage and hour issues are one of the number one claims that are brought in federal courts, particularly class actions against employers.
No, it's a really good one, and it really is something that employers need to be very cognizant of.
Yeah, so how do you record time? Are you using a time clock? Are you doing it through the computer? Are you rounding time? Are you doing it to the minute? How are you recording breaks? What are you doing when people work at home? All of those things need to be revisited. So I put that as number one.
Perfect. What's number two?
So it's time to be looking at your separation agreement and release. When you part company with an employee, and it's not if, it's when. We know that will happen from time to time. And if you are paying an employee some severance when they depart the company, usually on an involuntary basis, and most of the employers out there will by now be using a form of separation agreement with a release, that's the one document that changes the most in our practice. It doesn't stand still. It evolves, and it evolves both from a perspective of best practices and also how the law evolves and changes. So there are some whistleblower issues that need to be addressed in particular, but some other parts of that document where I'd say to HR folks, if you've been using the same release for the past 2, 3, 4, 5 years, it's time for a refresher.
Time for an update for 2017. What's number three?
Number three, it dovetails what we talked about earlier. There's always going to be changes that you need to make to your handbook. I think the one that's staring us here in the face in Maine is your drug and alcohol policy. That's the most obvious one that needs to be changed with the legalization of marijuana. We've talked about that already. Not a lot more to add, but I'd say every employer needs to be looking at that. And if you have a drug testing policy, clearly you're going to have to look at that drug testing policy and figure out how you dovetail that policy with the change in the law.
Three solid tips for 2017. Peter, thank you so much for being on the show today.
You're most welcome. Nice to be here.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, 1310 AM, 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VerylDana.com.
Hi, it's Doug Currier from Verrill & Dana. Today I want to talk about pretext, the idea that an employer makes up a reason why an employee was let go to hide the fact that the real reason is because of some discriminatory bias. Pretext is a critical element for proving illegal discrimination. Too often employers, in an effort to be nice or to avoid a difficult conversation, make up a reason for separation that can be easily disproven. For example, telling an employee he's being laid off when in fact he's being let go because of performance considerations. Then, when the employee is later replaced by another worker, the employee can assert that the reason given, a layoff, was a pretext to cover for discrimination, as evidenced by the fact that no position was being eliminated and someone else was hired to do that same work. To then give a different reason for the separation will beg the question, was the employer lying before or is the employer lying now? Do not get caught in that trap. For further questions or insights, please feel free to reach out to Verrill & Dana's Labor and Employment Law Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VerrillDana.com. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB, 1310 a.m., or streaming live on WLOBRadio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.